All right. Thank you for joining us tonight for Planning Commission. We have Commissioner Jorgensen joining us online. Thank you for being here online, Commissioner Jorgensen. We will open up to any public comments that are not pertaining to an agenda item, if there are any. And if not, we will move to agenda item number 3, consideration of a proposed code amendment to Title 10, Chapter 10.
All righty, thank you guys. So this is a code amendment application presented or applied for by Thomas Call, who's a longtime resident of North Salt Lake. He currently is over in the recently annexed area that is zoned R17. He is wanting to remodel his existing house, do an addition to his garage, which also includes converting the existing carport into an actual garage. And because of that, he's run into an issue where he's on a corner lot. And in our current code, we consider the front yard anywhere that the right-of-way touches the public street. So in the diagram before, you can see in red what is considered a front yard. In the front setback on all residential zones, R17 through RM20, the minimum required front yard setback is 25 feet. So what we have found from Mr. Call's research is that all of the neighboring cities and communities, including Farmington, Woods Cross, West Bountiful, Bountiful, have a reduced side street setback when you're on a corner lot, and that is 20 feet. Because of this, we felt that it was a reasonable code amendment and encouraged him to move forward with the application. This will change the verbiage to say, and this is trying to stay consistent with our land use table and the way it's laid out, it'll say the minimum depth for the front yard for main building is 25 feet. But underneath it, in parentheses, it says corner lot side street setback 20 feet unless we're accessing a garage. The reason for that little caveat at the end about the garage and access is because during DRC and during numerous conversations for new townhome developments and even single-family homes, our police chief has notified us that when we have the minimum setback at 20 feet in communities like Foxborough and things like that, that if someone has a larger truck, even an F-150, their end hangs into the sidewalk and into the public right-of-way, and it's causing issues with pedestrian access and things like that. And so to try and avoid that, that's why we've included this code section. So if someone wanted to do a garage and their side street did not access into the garage, then they can reduce to 20 feet. If they wanted to do a garage or some sort of additional driveway per se, and they wanted to have the addition come out to 20 feet, they couldn't on the side street if it had the driveway access. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's why that caveat came about. The applicant seemed to be satisfied with what the verbiage was, and the DRC is recommending that the Planning Commission forward this for approval by the City Council. I'm happy to answer any questions, and the applicant is also here if anyone has any questions about the intent. He also did provide you guys with a handout, and that is all of the different codes that he researched that we are now just coming closer to our neighboring communities with this amendment.
Thank you, Mackenzie, and thank you for being here, Mr. Call. Any questions for Mackenzie or the applicant? Or any discussion between the commission? And if not, we
can... No discussion. I would say great work on the research of the applicant to look at these other cities, and mm-hmm. seems completely reasonable. I'll make a motion.
Public hearing.
Oh, yep, sorry. Sorry, we jumped the gun there. All right, we are going to open a public hearing because this is a legislative item. Any comments? Thank you. If you'll just state your name for our meeting minutes.
My name's Thomas Call. I'm the one who asked for this, and I'd like to thank Mackenzie for all the work that she has. And she said most of what I wanted to point out. The two other things I wanted to point out One was, as I looked at the different cities, I looked at Bountiful City. They have another consideration. This is on the page 2, where you're looking at Centerville, and right above that, I have a highlight that says, and they're making a consideration for irregular lots, and where they will, in this condition, they would allow 15 feet. And I thought that might be something to consider. This is not what I want to have considered tonight, but this is something I'd want to maybe consider in the future, because this, having this caveat, would make it possible for us to not to make any changes. If you flip to the next page, is Farmington City. I don't have the notes here, but as I talked to the Farmington City planner, he said in this instance where I was doing this build out, that if he was McKinsey, mm-hmm. he would have the right to say, yes, I can make this variance in your behalf and not have to go through this 2.5 month long process. Yeah. And finally, on the last page, McKinsey covered everything else. I did want to say that Centerville also has an 18-foot allowance in certain conditions, so it's a little bit tighter and give the homeowners a little more access. What you have on the last page is our proposed addition, and you have a little hashtag, and you've got a little corner of the house that is out of compliance now. And you can see that is if this 20-foot amendment is made. But I just wanted to see all the different things, but also point out about how Bountiful allows the 15-foot allowance when you have irregular lots. And if you look at my lot, it is weird in how it's set up and how, you know, it's not square. You know, as I look at the codes, it says, you know, do a square off of the perpendicular from the street, and it's not perpendicular, it's a circle. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for the applicant from the commission? Thank you for sharing this information with us. We always try and do our best to have codes that work well for the majority of lots and applicants, but there always comes in these side, you know, outliers like this. So we appreciate mm-hmm. your patience in working through this process, because I know that it does slow down some of these things, and we appreciate your input on that and are always working to improve our code and process. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I have a question. This is probably for McKinsey. So based on...
Do we need to close the public comment?
Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry. So based on this, what he gave us, that little hashtagged area, would the change, because right now we're considering changing the code, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're...
This is a full code amendment for all residential zones in the city, so that on a corner lot, the setback on the side street is 20 feet.
So then would he have to do something else, because for that little spot right there where it's 15?
Yeah, he won't be able to, that little hatched area will not be permitted if that's where the property lines are, because that's, according to this, 16 feet away, 15 feet at the closest.
Okay.
But if you look at the dotted line, you got that dotted line, this 20 foot would allow everything from that dotted line forward.
Right,
so it would
right.
make it so we can get to our two-car garage. The building just wouldn't be as square and nice.
So the garage isn't existing. That's what is being built out, the garage part, the little hashtag.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the hatched area is what they're going to lose in shape. But right now they have an existing carport, and if you see the box next to it, it says garage. That's the addition, so yes. that they can take the existing carport and make it into a two-car garage that's enclosed.
Nice. Right, it's a property, and then the access is from?
Access is from 3900.
Okay.
So there's no access from the closest corner.
Okay.
The closest side street. Any other questions?
Laura Call.
Yeah. Wife of. The hashtag is out of compliance at the 25 foot.
20. It's the 20.
Is it?
Yes. This, if I hashtagged all the 20, 25, it'd be all that the area of the new addition.
Hashtag.
Okay.
Sorry.
All good. Mackenzie, question for you. On, on the Centerville portion of this, where it denotes RM at 18 feet, Would there be something for the future where we would consider RM at 18 feet as well to be more in line with what Centerville's doing?
My boss is ready to answer.
Yeah, hi, on Sherry. On that Centerville, when I looked at it, it's saying you can reduce the rear setback to 15 feet, not the side street setback to 15 feet.
Sorry, the side, so the table that Tom provided was the...
I'm not sure what their comparison for the RM7 or their RM zone versus their RL. I would assume the RL is their RM. Standard lot.
I think RM is like a equivalent of like a duplex.
Okay, and that's R17 zone, but yeah, I didn't look at that. It does say right here, a regular lot on any lot which is not generally rectangular in shape, the required minimum rear yard setback may be an average of the distance measured from the rear corners of the main building directly to the rear property lines. However, at no point may the main building be closer than 15 feet to the rear property lines. Okay. So the 15-foot allowance is the rear. The 18-foot is whatever their RM zone
is. The side,
RM
yeah. It looks like,
is.
Yeah, the RM for side, yeah.
But that's
okay.
The only difference there. So I think that's
so,
the rear.
So, and I guess why I'm asking is because in the past, in a former life, I applied for a code amendment for R17, and we had talked about dropping to like smaller side setbacks.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm just curious, like where...
They're different on a standard lot than on a corner lot. So okay. On your standard lot right now, through all of our residential zones, the minimum side yard setback is 8 feet. With the combined total, when you add the two required side yards, of 20 feet. So it's typically like an 8 and 12 if you build it out, or a 10 and 10, or an 8 and a 50. You know, it can be anything like that. But that's a standard lot, not a corner lot.
Okay.
And that's honestly more to protect public utility easements. A lot of them are 8 feet wide in our established subdivisions as well.
Oh, but current code has it at 8 and 12?
Yeah. Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah, so like on the plan he submitted, the standard on the side that is not the rear, not adjacent to a street.
I guess I was under the impression that the side yard setbacks were different than that.
Nope, 8 and
12. Did that change recently?
No.
Okay.
We can talk about that later if you'd like. I'm happy to explore.
I'll stop talking.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public on this item? And if not, we will close the public hearing and we can continue with discussion amongst the commission for staff or applicant if there's questions. Or if we're ready for a motion, we can move towards that.
Commissioner Holbrook, I move that the Planning Commission recommend for approval the proposed code amendment with the following findings. The proposed amendment is in accord with the comprehensive general plan, goals, and policies of the city. Changed or changing conditions make the proposed amendment reasonably necessary to carry out the purposes stated in this document.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. And any comment or discussion on the motion?
Okay, sorry. I do have, because I feel like I just want clarification on this. So if this passes, will this allow him to do what he's wanting to do? Or is he still...
Yeah, to an extent. But also we have to think about this. This is not a single property that this code amendment's affecting. It's the entire North Salt Lake. Because this is changing every single residential zone's code.
Right.
Yeah, so it's giving him the ability to have his two-car garage that he's wanting with his addition. The difference is instead of having a perfect square garage, he's going to have to construct it and design it so that it goes like this and like this because his property has an angular curvature around the side yard. So it's still possible. He's still going to be able to get, they are still going to be able to get what they want.
Okay.
It's just not to the fullest extent. And we always could entertain reducing it further, but we have to think about the impact on every neighborhood, excluding Foxborough, because
so
they're a district.
I guess a follow-up question is, is it worth it to discuss that irregular shape?
I think that's
suggestion,
a very
or is it
objective conversation.
Okay.
We have irregular shaped lots all over the city.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, I could also argue that this isn't an irregular shaped lot because it has it's a corner lot. It has two fronts and a side and a rear, just like any other one. The only thing that makes it irregular is that it was something we annexed in, and so it doesn't necessarily meet all of our standard right-of-way requirements. It doesn't have a sidewalk. It's their property line is set back way further into the property than you would guess because of that.
Okay.
But it's totally up to you guys. I think if you guys wanted to explore doing that, I would maybe recommend that you give me the ability to go back and research it more, because Centerville is the only one that does that out of all the neighboring communities. But and it's rear yard, not side yard.
Right. That's what I want to ask, so thank you for.
And I think what he was talking about is the language that he couldn't find in the Farmington code that says on irregular lots, the staff can make a determination to give a variance without having to go to a variance, to go to hearing. But just to be clear, this doesn't give him everything he wants, but it gives them enough to do the two-car garage. And there's another option, too, because the front isn't set back, of the house isn't set back 25, it's set back more than 25 feet. So they could actually bump the front of the garage out, and then they have more room, and they could get the square. So there are more than one options.
Got it.
But this is a pretty good compromise, I think. And okay. I think we can make something work.
And the biggest thing to me is that we're coming closer to what everyone else in our community is doing. So.
Okay, thank you for discussing that.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. Okay, so we have Commissioner Holbrook's motion on the table and a second from Marsh. Any other comment or discussion to the motion that is currently on the table? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and it passes. All right, thank you for being here, and thank you, staff, for all your work on that and research into what neighboring areas are doing. Appreciate that. We will move to agenda item number 4, consideration of a preliminary plat for Amberley Place at 979 North Amberley Drive, and we have Jackson Haslam as the applicant. Do we have an applicant here today? Yes, thank you for being here. And Mackenzie.
Great, thank you. All right, guys, so we reviewed Amberley Place subdivision back in January, if you recall, at their general development plan review. The history of this property at 979 North Amberley is that it was part of the original P District rezoning for Foxborough. The LDS Church owned the property, and in 2008, they came to City Council and requested it be removed from the P District zoning of Foxborough. At that time, they never reverted it back to the old zoning, nor did they give it any sort of supplemental regulations. So while it doesn't require a rezone, it is going through the development agreement process, which we discussed with you guys and City Council last time. And if this has an affirmative recommendation to the council tonight, the council will review the development agreement and hopefully sign it at their next meeting. So that's the history of the property. When we last met, they had the cul-de-sac coming off of Amberley Drive. And if you recall, the public came out at the public hearing and were saying, hey, this doesn't make sense. Also, there are no drive approaches or accesses coming off Norfolk. So why are we randomly going to put those in? It's just not cohesive with the neighboring development. So the developers heard that comment, and for the presentation they did to City Council, they switched it. We have now begun calling the cul-de-sac Piccadilly Court instead of Antelope Court in an attempt to make it more, again, cohesive with the neighboring developments. The Foxborough development, as you guys recall, has different subzones. The neighboring subzone for this property is R16. And in your Planning Commission staff report, I've provided a table that shows you the comparison for what is in the R16 zone already and what this developer, Ivory Homes, is requesting. So the biggest changes here is the minimum lot size in the R16 zone is 6,000 square feet. They're requesting 5,760 square feet. The reason for this is on lots 12, 13, and 14, they're the only ones that are under 6,000 square feet, and that is because the storm drain easement and water line easement that we had to figure out to get water from the cul-de-sac out back to Amberley, so it has a loop system. And the DRC felt that was a really good compromise, and the applicant has told us that their house plans and designs that they have in their catalog will still work with that change. The other modification to the R16 zone is that in the R16, the minimum front yard setback to the living space is 15 feet. They are requesting 20 feet. The reason for this is in Foxborough, we had a minimum front back to a garage of 20 feet, and then your porch was 15 feet. It was an attempt to make it so porches were more forward-facing and garages weren't. But with their home designs, it's kind of irrelevant. So 20 feet is fine. And that was part of what we approved at the general development plan last time. And then the only other thing they're asking for, which I actually really appreciate, is the minimum total combined side yard setback in the Foxborough, in all the Foxborough districts right now, it's a minimum 5 foot side yard and a minimum combined of 10. So it's 5 and 5. They are saying 5 and 8. So a minimum total combined of 13. And that'll just be helpful in creating a little bit more separation if we ever needed to get down there, that kind of thing. I think it'll be a better suited development. And then with maximum lot coverage, in the R16 zone, right now it's 60%. The applicant has requested 75% after looking at the standard lot sizes and their home designs. From what I know about Foxborough and what I've seen, no one hits 60% lot coverage. That 60% sometimes might be hit if someone decides to put a detached garage, a shed, and a pergola. Like, it's roof structures, it's really hard to fit. They felt most comfortable with that 75%, and we as staff support it, because that doesn't mean the house is going to cover 75% of the lot. That means if 10 years down the road that homeowner wants to put in a covered patio or a detached garage or a shed or whatever that looks like, they can do it. So it should have very little impact to the surrounding neighborhood. Now, the proposed architectural styles have not changed. They're Craftsman and Farmhouse. The proposed colors and materials are consistent with the existing neighborhood. We, until today, have said that, here, let me show you. Oh, here's the landscaping plan. Sorry, I didn't show you guys that. We were very selective about where they put the trees in accordance with our newer street tree ordinance that came about after Foxborough was developed. We take a lot of care in the placement of those trees in relation to drive approaches, water meters, property lines, things like that, because of what we learned from Foxborough. So, not to call anyone out. So here's examples of those houses that they're proposing on these lots. What I was saying about the basements is that historically, we do not allow basements in Foxborough. The water table's too high, and so they're unable to get that separation that's required to build a safe basement. I learned today that in Foxborough, some of the houses have crawl spaces, just for storage, for asbestos treatment, whatever that looks like. And I spoke with our city engineer, and she said that she could review every single, on a lot-specific basis, to see what the water table was on each lot, and if they could get the separation that is the standard of care and requirement, they could maybe do a crawl space in these bottoms of these houses. And I mean, that just provides extra storage. And like I said, if there's ever an asbestos issue, it's cheaper to remediate. I know that from my supervisor who had to deal with it a few years ago. And then as far as parking goes, they are required to provide a minimum of 2 parking spaces per dwelling unit. The proposed floor plans have driveways that are at least 20 feet long, at least 2 car garages. Some of them have 3 car garages on certain lots. And the staff has found the preliminary plan to be compliant with the approved general development plan, and DRC is recommending approval of, or recommending you guys recommend to the city council, approval of this preliminary plan with the conditions as listed, which are correction of outstanding planning and engineering red lines, which are very close, and final approval of the development agreement by the city council. Before I turn it over to you guys, I want to just remind you, because of our new subdivision ordinance, this is the last time this one will come before you. We won't have to come back for final plat. That's done administratively with just staff. So I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'm sure the applicant is happy as well.
Great. Thank you, Mackenzie. Any questions for Mackenzie with the applicant?
Some of the more common questions last time. revolved around the HOA. Is there any resolution to that?
Last I heard, it was looking good.
We'll let him know.
Jackson Haslam with the applicant. We have been working with the HOA. We are planning on joining the HOA. It's subject to a two-thirds vote from existing HOA members. That is underway. It's been about a week, I guess, since we got an update, but over the first 2 weeks, there was, I think, over 200 votes, and they need, I'm going to mess up the numbers, but we're close. We're on track to hit that number. So as long as the existing HOA members approve, then we'll be joining.
How are you going about informing the HOA members to vote?
Yeah, so it's all been run through that Foxborough North HOA, so they're doing the outreach. Email, Facebook groups, they've sent texts, kind of anything that they can do to reach out.
I live there. I have heard nothing.
Okay.
But well, also, I'm not on Facebook, so it could be. I'm glad you're at that number already, though. That is fantastic. That just
side question. So
it would be great to have them in the HOA, these homes in the HOA. Any other questions, comments?
Mackenzie, with the new subdivision ordinance, we're only looking at preliminaries going forward. Is that what you were saying?
Mackenzie, are there crawl spaces in Foxborough North or only in South?
I don't know how to answer that yet. I can get the answer. I just barely found out there were crawl spaces at all in Foxborough today.
I did not know there was any crawl. I know that there are some in Shamrock Village, which is pretty neighbory, but not our
city. That could have
been
what Karen was referring to when I brought the idea up to her. The applicant proposed it today. And so I brought it up to Karen on our way out of the door, and she said, I have to go back and find what we did in Foxborough because we already have the standard of care for the separation. And so I'm not sure what area of Foxborough, but I know somewhere there.
That is interesting. I've never seen one.
I'd be happy to figure it out when I know the information for the applicant, and I can inform you guys as well.
Yeah. When we were building down there, we asked about that, and they told us that they could do attic space, like reinforce the attic to do attic space, but that it would be like a home insurance issue because of the floodplain. I don't know if that is something that potentially comes up with builds, the insurance issues with that, but I think it's great to have more storage. It moves that stuff out of the garage, and hopefully cars go in the garage, so that would be great. I just didn't even know there was any houses that had that.
Do we have concern about front setback to garage at 20 feet?
We did, and we went back and forth quite a bit as DRC staff and the applicant. It boils down to the fact that on average, it's not every homeowner that's going to have the F-150 or the large SUV. It's a hit and miss basis. This is only 16 lots. This isn't an established subdivision that already has it. And our parking code right now only requires a 9x18 parking stall. And Ivory is familiar with that. And I think we would be wrong to ask for more in this situation, in my opinion. But that's just me as staff.
I wouldn't have brought it up, but the prior one, we just amended it to say if it's 20, then it can't access a garage.
It's something we have been talking about as a DRC a lot lately, but and the DRC has reviewed this since the general development plan approval at 20 feet, and our police chief was the one that was concerned, and he was pacified. So,
okay.
We just need a smaller car, Bill.
Put a requirement on all the homes. Must drive smaller than F-150. Chevy Colorado, maybe.
Any other discussion or comment or questions? And if not, we can move towards a motion.
Commissioner Holbrook, I'm prepared to make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission approve the requested preliminary plat with the following conditions: correction of outstanding planning and engineering red lines, and final approval of the development agreement by the City Council.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. And a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. And any comments or discussion about the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, and it passes. All right, thank you. Excited to see that continue to move forward. Thanks for being here tonight. All right, we will move to agenda item 5, consideration of a conditional use permit for a privately owned recreational facility not open to the general public at 197 East Pace Lane. And we've got Tim German as the applicant. Do we have applicant here tonight?
Yes.
Yes, thank you for being here. And Mackenzie.
Hi again. This is a conditional use permit, as Chair Larson stated, for a privately owned recreational facility specifically not open to the general public at 197 East Pace Lane. It's in conjunction with the neighboring property at 934 South Parkway Drive. As you can see in the aerial before you, there is an existing structure on the 934 property. It's a single family home. The same owner owns the property in question. That is a vacant lot. They've done some landscape improvements and there's a retaining wall in the back. And now they are wanting to construct a pickleball court for their own recreational use and enjoyment. And so our code right now in our land use table lists privately owned recreational grounds and facilities not open to the general public or to which admission is charged is made as a conditional use in the R112 zone. It's been a long time since we've done a conditional use permit, so I'd want to remind you, conditional uses, the way we've always interpreted them and the state interprets them, is a permitted use with conditions to mitigate potential problems. So the DRC met on this one, and there were initial concerns about what if this property did ever become a commercial use. That's not going to be allowed. Under current code, if things change down the road, okay, maybe, but right now, no. So the DRC is recommending approval of this conditional use permit with the conditions that the recreational facility remain privately owned and may not be operated as a commercial venture or open to the general public, and that 197 East Pace Lane must be tied and sold with a primary property of 934 South Parkway Drive and may not be sold separately as a commercial use. And Sherry and I have talked a little bit about that as well. It's a condition the DRC recommended, but at the same time, I'm not sure it would matter if the other neighbor or the person across the street decided to purchase this property. It just needs to be tied to another property that is residential, basically, to maintain its accessory use, even though it's not an accessory structure. It's a non-commercial use, yes.
What if the lot was sold to have a house built on it?
Then they would have to probably tear down this structure because it's not built to the code of a single family dwelling, but they totally could. That's only if it's a commercial use. If they were, and maybe we need to elaborate on that a little. Oh no, we say as a commercial use. So that's what that caveat at the end of the sentence means in the second condition. That way, if they wanted to sell it, or if they wanted to have their child develop it as their home, they could do that. They would just have to either remove the existing building or retrofit it and remodel it to meet building code for a single family dwelling. Either is possible. I have the floor plan right here. Here's the somewhat location of the structure. They're going to have to get a building permit, and at that time I will require more information. But here's the floor plan. So it's just a sports court with the required sides, and then they have a little mezzanine, basically, that's just a hallway to the bathroom because they're trying to fit the design in a certain footprint. So
I guess I'm just hung up on the wording then. Because item 2 mentions it must be tied to and sold with the primary property.
Yeah, we can change it. Or we could even get rid of that condition. I would feel comfortable with that. As long as it never becomes a commercial use. I agree
with the commercial use condition.
That's the biggest thing.
I'm just trying to give the property owner flexibility of...
Yeah.
And I come in and think I can build a beautiful home on this lot and tear this down. I don't want to buy his house as well.
Right. Sure. And I totally agree with that. We were in disagreement with some members of the DRC who wanted that to be a condition, because this really is a a conditional use in this zone, independent of whether it's attached to a single-family home.
Right.
So as long as it's a non-commercial use, it's a non-commercial resident or recreational use, it's allowed by conditional use permit without tying it to a single-family home.
Right. Someone at 232 Pace Lane could also purchase this pickleball court.
Someone just in have the a longer Vista commute. View subdivision could purchase yeah. this. Yeah.
Somebody who lived in Eaglewood Cove could purchase it and drive down and play right. pickleball in their private recreational facility.
We are in agreement with your concern.
Okay. And I would like someone else to word that so that I don't have to do
would
it.
Would you like to word it or would you like to remove
You've
it?
You've carried your weight with the motion, so Ron's going to do it.
So Ron's going to do it. You know, we also have the option to just remove the
Strike
second
two.
Condition. And just have the first condition, which I believe is sufficient, that the recreational facility remain privately owned and may not be operated as a commercial venture or open to the general public. I feel like that's sufficient for what we're trying to accomplish.
So just out of curiosity, what would be the method if somebody purchased it and then decided that they'll just live in it?
Well, we'd have to get the building official involved, and probably the fire marshal.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't have the facilities, first off, to just
There's
build
no kitchen.
To live in it as a dwelling unit because it doesn't have a bedroom. It doesn't have a kitchen. It has a small bathroom. It doesn't have a shower or bathtub or anything like that. So they would have to come in and get a building permit to change the occupancy, and they would have a permit to remodel it, or they would have a demolition permit, and then they'd get a permit to build a house. Because this is a big structure. I mean, it's as big as a pickleball court, a little bit bigger than a pickleball court.
Which,
so it doesn't, there's no way you could have the pickleball court on it and build a house on this lot. There's just, with the topography, there's no way that that would happen. So.
And I think that adds a little bit of historical context that I didn't give to you guys about these two properties. The property owner originally came in, and I hadn't realized this was a listed use in the code. Sherry and I discovered it when we were talking about Eaglewood Cove 13 recently. We knew about it, but we haven't used it for a long time. So me and the applicant were talking, and I said, well, our code says if you have a accessory structure, it can't be larger than half the size of the footprint of the primary structure, which limits how big it can be. It's accessory to the primary, right? And he was running into a problem with being able to get the size of a pickleball court with that requirement. So then we talked about combining the lots and doing a breezeway and trying to attach it to the home so we could get the size he needed, and it just became very cumbersome. And then we realized this is an available option for these folks where they can get the size they need as long as they meet the standards of the zone and enjoy their property. So that's the history of why we are where we are and why the lots are not being combined.
And frankly, if this neighborhood had a homeowners association and they all wanted to get together and buy this property as a homeowners association and use it for all the neighbors to use it, as long as they weren't charging an entrance fee and it wasn't a commercial endeavor, that'd be okay too.
Yep.
So to summarize, my opinion would be to remove the second condition, just myself.
Any other questions or comments or discussion?
Out of curiosity, what's the percent lot coverage on this?
Oh, you think I've done the math?
Well, I'm just that. If you don't know, you don't know. It's fine. I'm just curious.
I can't even see that far away to do quick math.
It's fine.
They're fine on the lot coverage.
There you go.
I know that.
Great.
So it is quite large. It's pushed back off the street. I'm a little worried about the location in comparison to the retaining wall, but I think anything can be engineered properly. It's just something our city engineer and geotechnical consultants will have to work out with this owner because it's in our sensitive lands overlay zone. So that's why I'm like, it could move a little, but they have to meet the general requirements of a single family's house in this zone.
But you can see that it's about, I mean, it's close to the same size as the house that's next door in reality. It's not a small structure.
And had we gone my original route, they would have done a breezeway or connected it some way after we did a plat amendment, and it would still be this big, if not bigger. So.
And compared to the other houses in the neighborhood, it would probably be the smallest house in the neighborhood on that footprint, too, technically, because it's not as tall, and it's a smaller footprint.
What did you talk breezeway and not a tunnel?
Yeah, breezeway.
That's my famous way of getting people the big detached garage and all those things. I'm like, let's just put a roof connector over it and call it an addition. I know how to work the code.
All right, any other questions or comments or discussion, or we can move to a motion.
Commissioner Holbrook, motion. I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for a privately owned recreational facility not open to the general public at 197 East Pace Lane.
You can leave it out.
And associated with 937 South Parkway Drive with the following conditions. The recreational facility remain privately owned and may not be operated as a commercial venture or open to the general public.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. Is it at 937 or 934?
934.
Okay.
It's 197 Pace and 934 Parkway.
Okay, great. So we have that motion on the table. Do we have a second?
I'll second it, Commissioner Ward.
Thank you, Commissioner Ward. Any question, comment, or discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
And any opposed? And it passes. All right, thank you for being here, and we're excited to see that.
Can I make a comment?
Sure, come on up.
I didn't think it was appropriate. I say this before the vote, but I've been in development 30 plus years. I've been on a planning commission. I did low income housing all around the country. And by far, this has been the most pleasant experience working with staff and planning commission in my 30 years of development. You guys do a really good job.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you. The staff is really great here. We're lucky to have them in North Salt Lake. They are fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you. And good luck to you with that. All right, and we will move to agenda item number 6, consideration of an amendment to a conditional use permit for the John Vulcan Academy at 1130 West Center Street. And we have applicant Janie Polson. Do we have an applicant here? Thank you for being here. And Sherry.
Great. Okay, so we are looking at this property at 1130 West Center Street. So this is the property, if you remember from last fall, this is the Lifeline property. They had a residential youth treatment facility on this location. So just to give you a little bit of a history of the property itself, in 1995, this property was issued a conditional use permit for what I'm telling you is the residential youth treatment center, where they treated youth with substance abuse problems, behavior, or mental health illnesses. At the time, that facility was operated during daytime hours, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and the students lived in foster homes overnight, but went to school here and got treatment here. The school had about 75 students and up to 40 employees. Then in 2004, they came in and requested a code amendment or a map amendment to go from the MD zone to the CG zone, which allowed a residential component to this. And they expanded their conditional use permit to add the second building at the north. So you can see this property has two buildings. The school was on the south, in the south building, and the treatment was in the south building. And then the residential dormitory was the north building. So they were licensed then to have 20 students living on the property. Sometime between 2004 and 2024, when they closed, it's been rumored that it grew to have about 54 students, but I don't have any record of them coming in and amending their conditional use permit. So that's not really here or there, but they were permitted to have 20 beds. So a little history on the program that wants to locate here. If you're familiar with Red Barn Academy, they're located in Farmington. They've been operating for about 10 years, and it is a sober living life skills facility for adult men who are in recovery from substance abuse. So they've already gone through the treatment programs, and now they're going into this voluntary vocational training program where they live on site, they have, and they agree to live in a sober living facility, and then they work for the businesses to get skills. So Red Barn Academy has Red Barn Movers as one of their businesses, and then they had a Red Barn thrift store, and they had a restaurant called Sticky Bird. So recently that business announced that they were going to be closing, and not because of any failure or anything with the program. It was because of personal financial reasons for the founder of the company, and so he was going to divest himself of this. So John Vulcan Academy, who runs a very similar program and has facilities in Washington State, Arizona and Canada runs a very similar program. In fact, the gentlemen that run the operation at the Arizona facility are graduates of the Red Rock Barn Academy from a few years ago. And so they got wind that this was happening, and they sought out purchasing Red Barn Academy and taking over their operations. They found this building because it had the conditional use permit that had the residential component on it. They purchased that, and they're proposing to move the business there. They're renaming the business. They're not keeping the Red Barn branding, but that is basically the same program and the same students that will be in there. So a little background on conditional use permits. Conditional use permits are tied to the property, not to the property owner or to the business that is operated on that property. And that is transferable to a new owner as long as they abide by the conditions that were granted, or they come in and amend that conditional use permit to change those conditions. So they have applied for a conditional use permit amendment to modify the facility from a youth residential treatment facility to a residential adult life skills facility, to increase to a maximum of 100 residents, that doesn't include staff, and to operate the commercial moving business as vocational training for the students. And vocational training is a permitted use in the CG zone. So the Academy's operations have the following components. They have a voluntary, it's a voluntary 2-year residential commitment. The students reside in the dorm building, which is the north building. There are adult males only. The students do not have their own cars, so there's not 75 cars there from each one of the students in the program. All of their transportation is provided by the facility and facility staff. They have 10 fleet vehicles that they use to transport students and staff, and then they have 6 box trucks for the moving company, and then about 10 employee vehicles that would be at the site every day. The on-site housing there's on-site housing for their staff in studio apartments that are located within the dorm building. So this is the site plan from back in 2006, 2004, when they came in and got the permit to build the north building. So they have a basketball court that's on site and a sand volleyball court. And they may do some other improvements to the property for the residents. This is the floor plan of that north building. So it was divided into two halves because they had girls and boys in the youth facility, and they had a kitchen on one side and living areas and then the bathrooms. But John Vulcan is going to do a remodel, and they're going to remodel the bathrooms to add more showers, to add more toilets so that they can meet the occupancy that they're proposing. And then remodel the kitchen areas and the common areas, and then also 2 of the office areas are being remodeled into those studio apartments for their staff to live in. They propose that they will be doing a remodel in the future of the south building, which it has a lot of different offices and classroom spaces that, because it was used previously as a school. They're not proposing that at this time. But that is in the plan, which is why they're asking for a total of 100 students. The remodel, as shown on this site plan, or on this floor plan, would allow about 86 students to be here. These are bunks, and so they're, you know, it's dormitory living for these guys. And but once they remodel the other building, they'll have a little more space and more bedroom space. So it'd be just a little better for them on that. Let's see, so I just want to make sure I hit everything. So the property itself is 3.5 acres in size. It has 90 parking spaces. That easily accommodates the parking that they need for their 10 fleet vehicles and their box trucks, and of course the staff parking and then any guest parking, because the students don't have their own vehicles on site, and they have the outdoor recreation areas. So just some other considerations for this conditional use permit amendment. So the city has received, and that were included in your packet, quite a few letters of support, both from Farmington City and the health department, and then a letter from the students themselves talking about the program and how positive it's been. This facility and this operation has a really good reputation. People don't have anything but good things to say about them. They've been very active in the community in Farmington. They've filled sandbags voluntarily. They've come out and helped when we had the big windstorm and helped cut up the trees and haul them off. But this is a really needed program in Davis County, and they have become a really loved portion of Farmington. In fact, when they announced they were closing, there were a lot of Facebook groups and fundraisers because the citizens in Farmington wanted them to stay. And so if that doesn't tell you something about the way they operate their program, I don't know what does. And the other thing that should tell you something about the way they operate this program is that the Foxborough neighborhood page, there have been questions where people have said, hey, what's happening to the Lifeline facility? And somebody will chime in and say that this is the program that's going in, and everybody else says, the comments are like, yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. I hope they do that. And we don't have anyone here tonight to speak out against this. And so that tells you something, because you remember last fall when the homeless shelter wanted to locate at this facility and the turnout that we had for that public hearing. So this is not a public hearing. It's not required to have a public hearing, but the staff and the DRC are recommending approval of this amendment to the conditional use permit with those conditions that we've outlined in the staff report, that they limit their operation to 86 students until they have remodeled the second building, and that the students not be permitted to have their own vehicles while enrolled in the program, that all student transportation be provided by the academy, and that allowing the operation of the moving business as a vocational training, and that they park the box trucks up on the north side in that north parking lot, not in the parking lot down adjacent to the trailhead or Center Street. Do you have any questions? And we do have the applicants here if you'd like to ask them any questions about their operations.
Thank you, Sherry. Any questions from the commission?
Commissioner Jorgensen, Sherry, this certainly seems like an important thing to have in the community. It looks like it's very well regarded, and I don't have any major concerns, but just two questions. One would be, did the DRC see any potential scenarios or conflicts with the use of this property? And I realize it has lots of parking, but with the adjacent Legacy Trail Park, trailhead and parking that's down there, I mean, is there any concern there could be any conflict there? And then the second question goes to the extent that, down the road, there were issues and so forth. Is there an actual governing regulator for, what they actually do? And this would be, somebody who's overseeing their adult life skills activities and so forth.
Yeah, so these are not licensed by the Department of Human Services, because they're not youth, and they actually don't do any treatment. These students have already gone through treatment, and they're voluntarily agreeing to live in a sober living facility to get life skills and training in a job so that they can become productive members in society as they transition to the next stage. As you know, when people have substance abuse, it's very difficult when they first complete their treatment, and then they have to transition back into the community, and oftentimes they are around the people that will make them, tempt them to go back into substance abuse, right, and fall into the same habits. And so this is a transition time for those folks to live in a place where they are insulated from that influence that was difficult for them in the past, and teaches them the skills they need so that when they leave this facility, they can continue a sober lifestyle and be really good, productive members of the community. So that they're just not licensed by the Department of Health and Human Services. They're licensed by the Department of Commerce as a business.
Okay, and then what about the any potential scenarios or concerns relative to conflicts with the trailhead parking?
So we don't foresee any conflicts with the trailhead parking. The trailhead parking is actually not on their property. And that site plan change came after this site plan that you're seeing on the screen now. So it lays out just a little bit different. You can see it on this particular layout. You can see how the parking that's closest to that south building is on their property, and all of the parking the south of that is the trailhead parking. And when the chief of police is on our DRC, and he absolutely said he had no concerns. He's talked to the Davis County and Farmington police departments and their chiefs, and this program's been a really great asset in the community. They haven't had any problems with the students getting into trouble or doing anything they shouldn't be doing. And they keep a pretty tight rein on them to help them learn those skills so they don't re, what would you call that? Fall off the wagon? I don't know how else to say that. But yeah. Relapse. Relapse yep. was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, thanks for that commentary and insight, and that all sounds good. And again, I think you know these are important types of services.
Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen. How many staff members? It didn't say that, right?
How many staff? 10 staff members.
So the previous one had 75 students and 40 employees, and this one is asking for 86 currently and 10 employees and then 100 and still at the 10 when the other building is renovated?
We'll have more employees. We've lost a few with the transition and are operating a deficit with employees.
Staff. But somewhere around that like 10 range, not going all the way up into the 40.
No.
Okay.
And when you think about the previous operation, those were kids. Mm-hmm. So there are standards with the state as to student-teacher ratio, and they were also doing they were teaching them high school classes as well as having therapists and counselors and that type of treatment for their mental illness or their substance abuse issues. So it's a different operation for the staff to student ratio.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussion? If not, we can move towards a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission approve the amendment to the conditional use permit for 1130 West Center Street for John Vulcan Academy with the conditions outlined in the staff memorandum.
Thank you, Commissioner Ward. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Jorgensen.
Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen. And any comments or discussion as the motion stands?
Seems like it was made for this.
Yeah. All right, all in favor say aye.
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 And aye.
Any opposed? All right, and the motion passes. Thank you for being here, and we look forward to having you in the city and working with you. And we will move to agenda item number 7, report on city council action items.
So the council hasn't met again since your last meeting because they had their budget retreat on April 12th, and then they canceled their meeting on the 15th because they were at a conference in St. George. But I wanted to give you a little update of what the Arts Committee's been doing because I've been working with them, and I had their meeting last night, and I thought this would be really fun for you guys to see. So and we have a local artist in our city. He's passed away recently, but his name is Dave Montanaro. He owns this property just across the street here. And then his family owned the old Bamberger rail station that's just to the west of this building. And of course, he's an artist. His name was David Montanaro. And he's really known for these fun, whimsical pieces. So his daughter and his widow approached us with the idea of being the first participant in our new North Salt Lake mural program. So they have agreed to have this building have a mural put on it. And this is the artwork that they have, that the Arts Committee has decided that they like the best of all of the different pieces. And the Arts Committee has recommended the City Council that they, that we start our mural program with murals in the town center and that we highlight local artists. And so I wanted to show you this because I thought it was really fun, and this really fits in with this Parks and Arts District and will go really well with the, with Hatch Park's redevelopment. It's really fun. So we can really, last night they were talking about, they're like, we really can see people coming and standing right in front of the door of that building where the little pink building is and doing selfies in front of it. And so I thought you might enjoy seeing what this looks like. So this will be our first mural that we are committing to. The committee wants to do two murals, so if we get a grant, we know that we'll be able to do two murals. So the next one I'm going to show you, I'm putting the caveat out that the property owner has not said yes yet.
On this one, is there going to be any kind of like plaque or?
Yes. Cool. So we're planning to have a plaque that has a QR code on it, so you could come up and scan the QR code and you could learn about the artist and see their other work and learn about, because his daughter's going to be the muralist that paints his dad's work, her dad's work.
So this artwork is from the owner?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yep, so this is one of his pieces. He has a lot of these really fun, playful pieces like this. And so I took some liberty in our slideshows to use my PowerPoint skills to superimpose those on top of them. The composition might be just a little bit different when the artist lays it out, because PowerPoint wouldn't let me move the image in the shape, but it would let me put the image in the shape that I created, but then not move it. So without distorting it too much. So it'll be a little bit different, but this gives you a really good idea. So the other building that the arts committee really wants to convince the owners to allow art to be painted on is this one coming into town, City's Edge. This is also another painting by David Montanaro with this vase and flowers. And so we are working to convince the owner to allow this to be put on that building if we can get the grant from Davis County Tourism to put that on there.
Is that material brick?
Yeah, it's on brick. That area, that part of the building is brick. So they just really thought that this would be a fun thing to do in the city in the town center. And I wanted to share that with you so that you could get excited about some new stuff coming to the city. And then incidentally, we had a gentleman come in today who owns a building on Center Street down in the industrial park. And he said, hey, are you guys doing that mural program? Because I'd like my building to have a mural too. So now we have we definitely have a second building on Center Street that wants to have a mural as well. So I think for years to come, we should be able to do a few murals every year. So we're really excited to see that move forward. So that's all the update I have for you. And then Mackenzie had a couple things.
I'll be fast because we all want to go home. So a couple years ago, I said we had iPads, and then I never did anything with them. So they are here tonight.
Yay!
They are charged. They are white. They are ready for the taking. So we had, tell me again, Kaden, who was on the list of people who wanted them?
Brianna, Irene, and Ryan.
Okay, so Irene doesn't want hers anymore. Brianna and Ryan, do you still want yours? You can have them through the rest of your term.
Sure.
Okay. Commissioner Mars, would you like one? So you can pull up the PowerPoint, connect to Wi-Fi, whatever.
Sure, but if there's somebody that wants it more.
Well, we have four. Ward, you didn't want one last time. Okay. And Tucker didn't want one last time because he always brings his laptop. Commissioner Jorgensen, did you want one?
I've got a laptop as well.
So we have one extra even if you take one.
Sounds good. I'll take one.
Okay. So they're going to Holbrook, Larson, and Marsh. And then this is just my reminder that your annual training is up in July. So if you have not accomplished your hours yet or did not go to the fall training, we'll want to start thinking about that. I haven't even really looked at it, I'll be honest. So before our next meeting, I'll put together my little PowerPoint slide on where everyone's at. We can get competitive about not being the last one to finish, Brianna. So that's everything I have.
Is that when you send out like links to?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll start doing that right around now so that you have a couple months to get them done.
Also, what is this back
here? Okay, so this is really fun. The executive staff at City Hall in the city. So all the department heads and the city manager and assistant city manager, we went on a retreat in January. We stayed overnight at a hotel in Provo, and this was an group activity that we had about the art of leadership. And so this is a picture that our city manager took, a photograph that he took. The assistant city manager, who is an artist, he's a painter, he took blank canvases and he blocked out that picture in 10 blocks.
You all painted that?
And then he gave one of these to each of us with very little instruction on what to do. I mean, he kind of gave us a little bit of color theory, taught us a little bit about how you make, you know, how there's not really true black and there's not true white and what colors you add. So I was thrilled to learn that if you wanted to make a color lighter, you don't actually add white to it. You add the color that's opposite on the color wheel to it, which was like really cool for us. So we all sat and we weren't sitting next to each other. We all painted our pieces.
Did you see each other?
Yeah. So 10 people painted this.
So that's what
the first thing we did is once we got our colors kind of on, we then took them and put them in order and lined them up together. And it was really funny because this picture right here was the city manager's and he's colorblind. And it was BYU blue, bright, bright blue. And so our instruction was, okay, now blend the pictures together. And so I'm this one in the middle right here. And I'm sitting here going, how do I pull his blues over into mine? And I'm like trying to figure out how to do it on the edge. And all of a sudden, Karen, our city engineer, this one was hers. All of a sudden, I see her over here, and she's like painting on this one. And I'm like, wait, so we can paint on each other's? And he's like, yeah. And we started sharing our palettes of colors that we used, and we started pulling the colors all the way through to match. And the people who were doing the top, they did that on the other side of the table. Then we put them all together, and we pulled the colors through on them together. And then so it was kind of a team building thing that showed that everybody has a different contribution, and we help each other out where we have strengths and where others maybe have some weaknesses, and it was really super fun. So they hang this up to show to the city council at their budget retreat. We had a really good time with it, and we think it turned out really pretty awesome, actually.
Cool. Yeah, very cool.
For non-artist people.
It looks great.
Yeah.
Which one's yours?
I did not paint one.
Next time, maybe, if you're invited.
Maybe I'll have to do that just for my department. I'll do a team building just for my department. That'll be fun. Instead of going to lunch or breakfast. Okay, Caden wanted to tell you something about the tree planting program.
So we have applications open for the tree planting program, and we need to spread the word. So tell your neighbors, or if you want to buy a tree, they're available. They can get a tree for half the cost, and it is installed for them, and it can go in their park strip or their front yard.
Oh, okay.
I had a question.
I got two neighbors already signed up.
So I have a question about tree planting. Do we need blue sticks to come to do stuff in our yard if we want to plant a tree?
Yes, but the Super Trees is the company that'll be planting trees. They'll take care of that. They'll phone in blue stakes and have it done a few days before they come.
What kind of trees are we choosing from?
There are three trees.
Yep, so there's the Pacific Sunset Maple, the something cherry, and then the Wireless Zelkova, something like that.
We have pictures on our website. We can send you the link again, and then you can see what they are. And so essentially it's about the cost of the tree and the installation is some of them are about $400, some are like $450. So you just have to pay half of that, and the city pays the other half.
And all the requirements are on the website.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So we just need a little site plan that says this is where you want the tree planted, and we will check it to make sure that it's the required distance away from a water meter or from the sidewalk.
How do you define front yard? Can it be past the front face of the house?
It can be. It just can't be behind a fence where the company needs to get access to the back. They didn't want to do anything in a backyard where there might be pets that mm-hmm. or that could get out, and that's just a different
could animal. An HOA apply?
I suppose they could if we had excess trees. I wouldn't have a heartburn over that. So, but right now,
asking.
Where are we at? How many people have signed up? We have 23 trees total.
We have sold 4 trees, so we need more
trees,
people to buy.
So
I didn't see on
don't
Instagram.
You want a tree?
You should put this on the Instagram.
You want a tree? Well, then get on our website and fill out the application. Okay.
She's doing it.
My HOA is going to go for 2,
I'm going to, yeah, we had a couple come down last year.
Well, now that I know what a front yard is defined for y'all, not like a
normal. How many front yards do you have, John? 3?
Well, no, I don't have that. I don't have as many as Tom. But no, it's that, like, there's a side, like the side of my garage, like my fence is really far back. And so there's a side yard that's not a side yard, still in front of the fence, but I didn't know if they were.
We wouldn't be that strict on that.
You know, this isn't like city code, like we're going down, like this is what a front yard is, okay. No. That's why I asked.
We just didn't want them to be behind a fence where the company would have to get access to a fenced-in yard. Okay.
And the deadline is April 30th, so it's coming fast.
And they're going to be planted the week of May 12th. So as soon as we know all of the locations, then they will set up the schedule and pick the date, call Blue Stakes, and we will let the property owners know what day they'll be coming to plant the tree.
Tell me again the total number of trees.
There's 23 total, and so it's about 7 of each, and then one. And I think the Japanese cherry, there's
sure, yeah.
No, my HOA is coming.
Well, my HOA is coming too. Just kidding. We can share the trees. We're going to take them all. No. And you.
Well, if we don't sell them all, they're going to be planted in city parks or something because the city has already ordered them.
Those are beautiful trees.
We have to have them.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah. We have to plant them somewhere because we're buying them.
30th.
April 30th.
Okay. Thank you. And then approval of the minutes from April 8th. Are there any amendments to the minutes? And if not, we can do a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, offer a motion to approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes as drafted for the April 8th, 2025 meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen. And a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, and they are approved, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
See y'all.
See you, Ron.